Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
The Treehouse, episode 25. A tremendous hem with Danny Baker and me, Louise Pepper.
Yes, it is. Welcome aboard, everybody. Here we go again with another 2 hours of fun for old and young without the slightest hint of vulgarity. And there is much to discuss. I know I say that every time, but people think it's just a pap. Not a pap. No, Napoleon Pepper. A tremendous ham. Now, you had to be listening before we started today to make... I know. Now we're just...
It's been a long day already.
We're just indulging ourselves, and that's not fair because there's so much on the agenda. We're going to go off first before the show starts, and the show starts any second now. We're going to Micronesia.
Certainly
Micronesia. There's the many nesias. There's nesia. You got nesia.
There's
nesia.
I thought it only came as...
There's small nesia, mini nesia, and micronesia.
Is there a poly as well?
Polynesia, but there's plenty of those. But this is distinct from all of those. Because it's today that Guam was became part of the United States. Quite happily, apparently. Guam. Now, Guam is extraordinarily remote. I'm all about Guam.
Is it an island?
Oh, yeah.
So Guam's a proper island.
Guam's a tiny, tiny... Micronesia is one of the bigger in Micronesia.
Okay.
But in Guam, if you're born in Guam, you're automatically a citizen of the United States for a start.
Oh.
And they get a kick out of it. They're not looking for independence. They're way out there. I mean, they're one of the most remote places you could possibly...
Where are they? No.
Well, it's south of the Isle of Wight. Way
oh,
south.
Okay.
It's down,
right,
down
fair
you know,
enough. Yeah.
It's over... You. I think it's between Japan and Hawaii. Don't ask me for details when I get into these reveries, Pebs. the US... The capital is... Hagana, but the most populous town is Dededo, and I've been looking. This is all worth staying with, and they, as I say, they're American citizens, and they're kind of it's not in Latin, but it's Guam, where America's day begins, because the sun comes up over
that's
there.
Charming.
So happy birthday to Guam, USA. But Guam's near neighbour. It's got only one near neighbour, and it's not very near. I think it's about 500 miles away. Is Wake Island.
Oh.
Wake Island over there. And Wake Island is where the HMS Dashing Wave was wrecked in 1870. And the crew thought, well, you know, they were on the reef and they fought against it overnight. And in the morning said, abandon ship, got off in a longboat and took with them two buckets, some wine and bread. And then when they got to the island, they found that there was no food or water on the island at all.
Oh.
They brought no clear water with them.
It's like coronavirus.
Exactly. So there it is. And when people are listening to this in a year's time, they'll say, man, that absolute carbon dates that show. They got to there, but there was nothing. And this is the bit I found when I was at 5:30 this morning researching this. I could have rung you up and told you,
yeah.
Save people hearing it. They attached a blanket to a long piece of wood on their boat and blew away again. I didn't think you could do that. I thought that was only something you see in...
That seems a bit easy.
Swiss Family Robinson.
Yeah.
They put up a blanket as a sail, and away they went, they were 31 days at sea, and they had no water. So the people on... There were 13 people on the boat. They were allowed one glass of wine a day. Now, Peps, you know, I enjoy a glass of wine.
Yes.
I'm not going to lie to you. I'm 62. Don't look at me like that. I can have that. But being a bit parched and about... I don't know, 12:30 with the sun beating down. Go on then, give us it. And it wouldn't...
It'd be warm. Warm, vinegary red.
It might be vinegary. But even if it's superb, you don't want it when there's no glass of water around. 31 days. And then they reached Strong's Island, which was okay. Strong's Island, right? I promise you, this might be worth it. And when they got to Strong's Island, that was all right, because it's sometimes known as Cosrae. And it's still going, Strong's Island. It's quite populous compared to all the other ones around there. In fact, on Strong's Island a few years ago, the Cosrae Nautilus Resort, which is a very popular resort if you want to go that far, was owned by Doug and Sally Belts. They wanted to return to Australia, so they did a raffle, a worldwide raffle. And a fellow called Joshua in New South Wales won it. And so he owns it now, and it's debt-free, and it makes a fortune, and he won it in a raffle now.
Wow!
You see, this is it. We are so... You mentioned coronavirus. Here we are in Europe, thrashing away with our everyday problems and your Brexit and everything else. Hey, Micronesia, they're unaware of such things. They're out there in this Cosrae or Strong's Island where we're on now. They have the best-tasting bananas in the world.
Oh, now I'm in.
The best-tasting bananas in the world. But they also have flying foxes who avail themselves of the best. This is all going in the planet. And here we are in greasy, grubby old street. Not looking up from... Honestly, what are we doing? We're given 70-odd summers in this wonderful paradise spinning through space, this big theme park. And no, we stay in our own streets. And over there, flying foxes are eating the best bananas in the world. I'm saying the good Lord gave us a raw hand, being human.
We need to check on our list to see if we have singular listeners in Guam.
If anyone's ever been out to any of these, indeed, Wake Island and Strong's Island. When he got to Wake Island, so I started looking up the history of Wake Island.
Has it since found food?
No, that's Guam.
Oh, right. Okay.
No, was it Guam? No, that was Wake Island. Yeah. You're right. Wake Island. No, there's nothing going on Wake Island. Except... How long's the show been going now? Except...
Well, they've taken our clock away.
They're quite right. It was useless to us. They took it to a show that needs it and occasionally looks at it. they went into this Wake Island, and it was notorious in the first half of the last century because of feather poachers. Feather poachers, huge international outcry because Japanese boats were making their way there because the feathers were needed. And I'm looking at you here, Peps, for ladies' hats.
Oh, true.
They were all protected, but...
my bonnets.
Here we are, and this is the last thing. These are the most prized feathers from Wake Island. The Laysan albatross, the black-footed albatross, the lesser and greater frigate bird feathers, but number one feathers were the mashed booby. The masked booby. Some people prefer it mashed, but the masked booby was the number one feather. And people made their way right out there.
Back to humans being absolutely useless.
Right the way out there, just to... And just take the feathers out of the birds. Probably said thanks very much. So, happy birthday, Micronesia.
Maybe we deserve what's happening to us all.
There is that. There is that. And this show, by the way, if it goes out on the Saturday, not if. Well, no, if it goes out on the Saturday. It's
God willing, it's
my Wendy's birthday today.
Happy birthday, Wendy.
I looked up who she shares it with. Very weak. It's very thin. Sorry, Wendy. It is. Lord Snowden. These are the best I could find. Lord Snowden and Paul Davies of the Happy Mondays. That's a thin hand in birthday poker. Who'd you share yours with?
Well, I'm quite fortunate. It used to be quite dull because it was Dean Cain who'd played Superman.
Terrible.
Jim Corr out of The Cause. But now J.K. Rowling, who made it Harry Potter's birthday as well, 31st
Did
July.
She?
So that's quite nice. Every Harry Potter book starts on the 31st of July because it's Potter's birthday.
See, I always think it's fixed in stone, but of course not. Over the last 15 years, bang.
There you go.
What a great hand to have. Mine, there's a few others, but it's Todd Rundgren, which I couldn't be more happy about.
The fates.
I told him, honestly, these emails are just... and the calls are... But anyway... I told him, I met him a few times, and no one, I was an early adopter of Todd, and he remains my absolute. I said to him, first time we met, I said, here's something, you know why we're going to get famously? No, you tell me why we're going to get arm famous. I said, we, Todd Rundgren, share a birthday, June the 22nd. You, 1947, me, 1957, June the 22nd. OK? Nothing. Now, that's something. I did say to him, come on. He's about 6'9". Come on.
I said the same to Jim Corr.
Did you? Nothing back?
When we went over to Ireland to do TFI Friday.
You told him nothing?
Hey, we've got the same birthday.
And what'd he say?
Nothing.
What's the matter with people? Anyway, happy birthday, Wen. Anyway, we'll see you on the next show because, there is absolutely stacks to be getting on with. Absolute stacks. All right. No, I'll do that later on if we get round to it. I've got 1,000 things in front of me, but okay. What are we doing today, Peps?
Number one, people who hate you irrationally. Number two, this tastes funny. Number three, the world's worst secret keeper. Number four, what have you been chased by? Number five, that's me in the background. And number six, losing clothing.
We've got some absolute pips and dandies on most of those. No one has yet admitted to being irrationally hated. Can you start work at a place? I mean, I don't know why she just don't like me. But it's got to be the irrational one is the way that'll work best. Give us one from over there, Peps. What do you want to start with?
This is Colin, formerly of London, now in Ottawa, Canada. Your first drink. My first alcoholic drink was at the age of around 4. I like that he follows this up. This probably isn't too unusual. No, it's still quite unusual.
Not in France. That's a late starter in France.
But in my case, it was every day before I went to school.
Wow, no.
My dad used to keep a bottle of whiskey in a kitchen cabinet. It'd probably been there for a long, long time, as it was only guests that would take a drink or two on the odd occasion that we had them. However, for some reason, I decided to try it once and, well, continued to try it. Weeks later, my dad noticed the bottle in the cabinet was nearly empty. His first thought was my brother, who was 3 years older than me. Alan, he shouted. Brother went running and Dad said, take a sip of this. My brother did and went, ugh. So with one down and one to go, my dad called me, Colin, and handed me a small glass, which I polished off and sat there looking quite innocent. Have you been drinking this? My dad asked, to which I innocently said, yes. I'm still not quite sure if Dad noticed the bottle first or if the school had asked questions. But from that point on, any liquor was in a more secure place.
What booze was it? I mean,
whiskey.
It was whiskey. It was whiskey
before school, age 4.
Age 4? I know, yes, of course, we must look askance at this and say, well, that's almost like abuse. But there's part of me thinking, man alive, he can take the pace. He can take the pace at 4 years old.
I like that his dad's version was a test. Try that.
No, I
the one who sups it down.
I sit with my old man at the Sunday dinner table. He'd come back from the Jolly Gardeners and he'd pour himself a Guinness and he could see me looking at it.
Always looks
and he said, want a drop? And I said, nah, because I'd smell it and it smelled revolting.
Metallic.
And 1 week with a brown foam, because now it's all white, but it's been brown foam, I've bottled Guinness. Go on, have a drop. And I took a sip and it was the most revolting thing I've ever drunk in my life. And consequently, I have not touched alcohol since.
Of course.
No, but
well, you think it's going to taste like cream soda or something because the foam looks so delicious.
The foam I could deal with. It was the actual body of the thing I found as a little... All right, now we've got a tremendous story here. Apropos one of the previous shows. If this is the first one you've heard, you're missing nothing in terms of there's no narrative. I'm sure you've figured out. But this is from our friend Pete, and Pete's referring to something that we said a few weeks back. Listening to a recent show about cheese falling off the back of a lorry. Yes, it was. It was the size of a pallet ball. Some cheese fell off a lorry. I want to tell you about a cheese encounter I had. Now, before I start this, I'm going to tell an old joke set it all up, because I won't be able to tell it afterwards. And Pete, in the game he's in, will know every profession, of course, has our Amish joke from the last show.
Oh,
superb. Best
so
joke I've
beautiful.
Ever heard. But I'll tell this little joke and then we'll carry on the email, because it is germane. There's a woman in a state of complete undress indoors, faffing around, and the doorbell goes, and she goes, who is it? And the voice says, it's the blind delivery boy. And she goes, OK, and she opens the front door and he goes, where do you want these blinds, lady? Anyway, that's the joke. It's not a bad gag. It's not a bad gag. But that is germane to what Pete's about to tell us. I'm a curtain and blind fitter.
Hey!
My nickname amongst some colleagues is Incompleter Peter. Although I'm fully aware I do need to focus my attentions and do a good and thorough job. Incompleter Peter. He's not advertising his skills very well there. He's called Incompleter Pete. I had no... Absolutely, in Blackheath, there was a fellow, a floor layer, come and do your floor, your Antico floors and all that. And he was called Psychedelic Floors, right? And I said, oh, I love that. So why'd they call him it? And I said, because he was in the Psychedelic Furs. What? And I've never had it confirmed or otherwise, but the people who told me that had no reason to lie about it. I mean, he was in that band, Psychedelic Furs. I said, and he said, now he's Psychedelic Floors. He's a floor layer. And as far as I know, he was. I mean, he was in the Psychedelic Furs, and now he's making an honest living laying floors. Anyway, oftentimes when I'm doing a job, the customer will sit around and watch me. And recently, a lovely couple were working from home on the day I was fitting their new Roman blinds. This particular customer is the boss of one of the better-known cheese manufacturers in the UK. A terrific man who was quite happy to let me get on with my work while he did his. While I was measuring out all the brackets, insisting on aligning this bank of blinds perfectly together and not really want to eavesdrop, I was aware of him, only half aware of him, on the phone. A little while later, I stopped momentarily as I thought, hang on, did I just hear that? I racked my brain trying to rewind and determined that he had indeed just said what I'd heard. And what he had said was this the chap you sold 42 tonnes to last year? 42 tonnes! 42 tonnes! Now, I love a cheese as much as anyone. But I've never thought of cheese coming in terms of tonnage. To him, of course, it was the most natural conversation in the world. I had a chuckle and went back to my blinds. That is a lot of cheese.
42 tonnes.
42 tonnes of... That's a future name of the programme, isn't it? 42 tonnes of cheese. What you got there, Peps?
Well, this is actually... from my friend Jason, who's slowly catching his way up.
So it's come
podcast.
To this. We're asking yes. friends to get in touch.
Well, because you were talking about rinks and pucks.
Rinks, yes, a few. A few shows ago now.
We had puck reviews.
We had puck reviews from Amazon.
And in one of them it said, good for ice hockey or bandy.
And I said, well, what else are you going to use a puck for? Because the word rink, of course, is only ever used in rectangles of ice. So...
And he's written ahoy hoy in a Swedish way with a J. I've been struck by your mention of bandy, and being Louise's friend Jason, I am now writing to lay claim to being Great Britain's most successful bandy coach. First, a few bandy facts. Bandy was actually created on the frozen East Anglian fens and played with a curved stick. The curve, like bandy legs, gives the sport its... And now, knowing Jason, I'm starting to worry that he's making this up, but I'm going to go with it.
No, because immediately you say bandy, I think when we mentioned it before, of course you think bandy legs.
Yes.
And I think I mentioned one of the few songs that have the word bandy in them is a Billericay Dicky by Ian Dury.
Yeah.
Rendezvous with Mandy, and Gabriel of Shandy, she didn't half go bandy. But now he's saying the game takes its name from bandy legs.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about it.
It's played on a field rather than a rink, but albeit a frozen field the size of a football pitch. Frozen fens are few and far between these days, so the newly founded Great Britain bandy team made their way to the Group B World Championships last year, beaten to the gold by Estonia.
Oh.
Group B is doing quite a bit of heavy lifting there, though. My claim to success derives from being a coach for the last 2 years for Hammerby Mixed Boys and Girls Under 12s, of which my son Ulf is a member. I was drawn to this calling not by the Lady of the Ice raising a bandy club for me to grasp, but rather more by dint of their being in a changing room when they asked for a new coach. Not being daunted by a complete lack of ability or experience, but having an immense sense of optimism and enthusiasm, after 2 years of coaching Hammerby 09, we have managed to fight their way into the final of the 2019 Hallmans Cup for under-12s, only beaten by our arch-rivals GT76.
This means nothing to anyone. No. I do apologise.
Seeing as the coaching team for the GB bandy team is entirely Swedish, I therefore believe this makes me the most successful British bandy coach of all time. Though they did spell the name of the cup wrong on our silver medals.
Now, one thing about it, and again, I'm not... I wouldn't dream of, casting... What were you? But Ulf is the son?
His son's... It's a wonderful name, Ulf.
It is a wonderful
U-L-F,
name.
But
isn't it
Ulf.
Like being called John over there?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't know it until Jason called his son Ulf. I didn't know
I only know about four Swedish bands, and every member of them is called Ulf. At ULF, yeah?
Yeah, I thought he was really rare. Well, we've got Paul on the line.
Oh, we have Paul on the line. Hey, Paul.
Hello.
Paul, do you know anyone in Sweden?
Quite a few, actually, yes.
Do you know anyone called Ulf?
No.
You sure they're in Sweden? Are you sure they're in Sweden? Because if you know a load of people over there, one of them, do me a favour, get in touch with them and see if they've got an Ulf somewhere in there, because otherwise...
I'm sure one of them knows some Ulf.
Well, one of the pillars of my world has suddenly collapsed. Why are you tugging our coat, my friend?
Well, you were talking about people that you've talked to and not realised who they were.
When it was all over. Yeah, go on.
I don't know if this would mean a lot to most people, but I'm sure you'll understand
My dear friend, you've just described the very nature of the show. It doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people. Continue.
Well, I do like to buy records.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on a trip to New York in the mid-2000s, and
there were still some record shops open in 2000, weren't there?
They've all gone.
You walk around the village now.
There's a few around still, but we're lacking.
Yeah.
So I went around the record shops and then deserved a pint on the way back to my friend's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
So I stopped at the Lakeside Lounge. I much missed bar on Edmund B. Another thing that's gone, as well as the record shops. An older chap at the bar saw my bags of records and asked me what I'd bought. And one of them was a 45 by a group called Richard and the Young Lions, a group from New Jersey, that had three singles on the Philips label in '66.
Man, did you know what? Me and you could do an entire hour podcast. Nobody would listen to it. But me and you,
that's
exactly the information I look for. They're singing on the Philips label. Mm. Okay, good. Get straight on Discogs, buys them all up.
Somewhere in Ireland, Danny Kelly goes, hang on.
Yeah. Anyway, so there you are. This fella's been interested in your purchases.
Yeah. And when he gets to this Richard and Lyons record, he's like, that's my band. I was the drummer.
No.
Seriously.
No. You sure the old fraud wasn't trying to pick you up?
he wasn't the type of bar, I'm afraid.
But he was the drummer from Richard and the Lions.
Well, he did actually look like the sort of person. You know, he was. I'd actually seen the band twice already. Uh-huh. They reformed. But you know, no one really remembers the drummer, do they?
Did you get him to sign the? That's always the thing. Do you get him to sign the bag or the label?
Neither really, because I just don't really do that sort of thing. Come on, man. Also, the picture on the sleeve he told me wasn't actually his band. They were late to the session.
Oh, right.
and they just put someone else's band on the sleeve.
let me just ask you a broad question.
Yeah. Now.
What is your holy grail? What are you looking for? You come past some mysterious old record shop in the middle of nowhere, and you go in there, and what do you have? Your heart in your mouth thinking, have they got a copy of this? What are you looking for? Come on.
No, my list is way, way too long.
Murder your darlings. Come on, give us one.
You asked a hard question
David Bowie's Rubber Band on Deram. I've got a copy. It's at best fair condition. And I'm always looking. I'll tell you this, and I rarely make this admission. I got outbid on that about 3 months.
Oh.
That does not happen to me, my friend. That does not.
It happens to me all too often.
No, I sit there with 7 seconds to go thinking, I hate to do this to everybody, but. Pow! And I put pow and it said, you have been outbid. And there was no time. There was no... anyway, yourself, what are you looking for?
They're all using those sniper websites, aren't they?
There were 2 seconds left. I didn't need to hire a sniper. I was the sniper. And let me tell you, and then you think, why didn't you?
They'd already had a much higher bid, a maximum bid, hadn't they?
Whatever it was, I didn't speak for 3 days and the world was the more... So, come on, one record you...
I've been there many times, believe me.
What record? What round record? I might have a spare of it. Look what a bonus that would be. Come on, one record.
I wouldn't mind a copy of I Must Be Mad by The Craig.
No, I've never heard of that.
No,
no, no, no, no, no. And what is that? Garage? That's Garage Band. Is it?
It's a British beat group, but more very garagey sounding. Yeah.
What sound? What label's that on?
Oh God, no, Fontana.
Did he say Buddhist beat group?
No.
But it was released in the US on Fontana as well.
Well, so.
They're both as rare as hen's teeth.
Well, and give us that again. It's called
I Must Be Mad, and the band's called The Craig.
No, Must Be Bad by The Craigs.
Can I intervene
Craig.
Here?
Yeah, what?
Paul hasn't finished the original story.
I know Paul hasn't finished his story, but once he mentions your record collector, I'm afraid the entire show sails out to sea as I hunker down. He might have had a copy of Rubber Band. So there it is. You're sitting with the drummer. You got your records out.
Yep.
Go on.
And we had a chat about old records and stuff, as you would do. And after a little while, a few minutes actually, he saw a friend of his passing down the street and ran out grabbing him. Brought him in to join us for a beer. Nice guy, named Lenny. We carried on the conversation about 60s rock and roll, new punk scene too, and all kinds of stuff. And it was a really good chat. I mean, he knew a lot of stuff. I didn't say anything stupid. Mm-hmm. Didn't contradict him or anything, you know.
And this fella was who?
Well, about half an hour later, the other guy asked him when he was playing next with Patty.
Oh, it was Lenny Kaye.
So it was Lenny Kaye.
Lenny Kaye, if you're talking to a collector of, and bear with it, everybody else, if you're talking to a collector of garage and what originally was called punk, not what we know as punk, the original.
Exactly, yeah.
Lenny Kaye is, that's it. It gets no great rule for it. Patti Smith's guitarist, but
he
curated an album called Nuggets, which, you know, every civilised household should have. And you sat with Lenny Kaye and didn't recognise him.
Half an hour.
Well, that
Paul's had your dream afternoon in New York.
No, if I'd have sat down with Donald Fagen and not recognised him, then that's what it for me. You know, you sit down. You know, that was David Bowie. That's what it's like for Paul and Lenny Kaye. Well, my friend, I'm going to go through the what I call my overspill. I might have a copy of that. It might be out there. I think I stuck it inside an old Shadows of Night album. I did. Thank you very much indeed, Paul.
I wish.
That was my kind of call. Nobody else's, but my kind of call. I just want to read you this, Peps. This is so beautiful. This is a beautiful email. And if some people found the last call trying, well, shape up. I didn't. But this is absolutely beautiful. Let's try this. This is from Andrew. The world's worst secret keeper, it says here. This is along those lines, says our friend Andrew. I was really into magic when I was a boy and built up a collection of tricks from the Magigram mail order catalogues sent out by the Supreme Magic Company of Biddeford in Devon. I used to take them out at school and try and amaze my friends. The only problem was that if anyone took any interest, particularly if they were bigger than me, as soon as the trick was over, they would force me to tell them how it was done. I couldn't keep the secrets and my hopes of joining the magic circle were fading. The bigger boys would always say, come on, now how's it done? And I would tell them. I eventually wrote to Paul Daniels for advice. And of course, Paul Daniels wrote back. Three closely typed pages of support and encouragement on beautiful thick paper with his logo at the top embossed in shiny black. Paul told me the thing to do was to keep all my tricks in a briefcase. I should take them out one by one, perform using the case as a platform, and then pack them away again and snap it shut and walk off. The final click of the briefcase would give a sense of closure, the trick safely locked away. And I would be off before my audience had a chance to start shaking the truth out of me. Of course, I never put this advice into practice. I still shudder to think what would have happened to Magic Andrew and his magic briefcase. The big kids wouldn't have stood for that, but I would always be grateful for that letter. From time to time, you hear people saying uncharitable things about Paul Daniels, but I won't hear a word of it. A proper childhood hero. Isn't that beautiful?
Oh.
Three-page letter, Tank, and that makes perfect sense. Snap it shut. It's closure. I mean, no, it's not closure from, like, Big Ron, who said, where are you going? Give us that briefcase.
Who's this kid with the briefcase?
And they chuck it in the canal. I mean, I don't know if they would have chucked it in the canal, but isn't that beautiful?
Oh.
And that's a nourishing story. A good deed in a wicked world. What do you got over there, Peps?
We've got David. Things that you can't stop. We took a family holiday in the late 90s to Tunisia.
This is things you can't turn off, can't stop. I've got it.
OK. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We also booked a desert trek, half a day riding camels, horses and ponies lunch in a desert town.
Brilliant.
The first part of the trek was OK, riding camels, etc. Though maybe as another story, I did have to punch a camel full on the snout as it was trying to bite my daughter's leg.
Oh.
Anyway, at the end of the first part, we were escorted to an area with a large trailer contraption on it with 30 seats, like almost like a single-decker open bus that was going to be pulled by six horses. Mm-hmm. By the time we got there, they only had two seats left towards the front, which my wife and daughter took, this leaving my eight-year-old son and myself with nowhere to sit. One of the local guides pointed to the front end of the carriage where the driver was sitting and holding the reins. We jumped up front, smiling at each other. Look at our prime seats. The driver smiled at us, and upon instruction from his colleague, with a slight snap of the reins, the six beasts began to stroll forward. It was great, and we were very excited. After about 5 minutes, the driver nudged me and handed me the reins. With a little sign language, instructed me on how to hold them and control the slow step forward of these six rather fine-looking stallions. After a couple of minutes, seeing I was in control, he jumped down from the carriage and began walking alongside, chatting to his mate. This was a mistake on his part. It was at this moment in my head I was transported to the Wild West with a treacherous journey across the plains with my family. It also seemed my eight-year-old son had been transported too, and he gave me a knowing nod. In my best cowboy horse controlling voice, I gave a loud yah and snapped my wrists on the reins. The six trusty seeds duly obliged, and we went to a slightly brisker pace, but still not quick enough to avoid capture from closing engines. I gave another yah and a harder snap of the reins.
A lunatic.
And the charges began to pick up the pace. It was amazing. The wind was blowing in my face, the desert rushing by, and then I became aware of screaming. As we sped across the plains, I glanced back over my shoulder to see the 30-plus passengers in my wagon bouncing up and down in their seats as it bounced on the uneven surface. They were not having the fun that Stephen and I were. I glanced to my left, and the original driver was running alongside at a Usain Bolt pace, frantically waving his arms. He dived and grabbed hold of the carriage and was dragged for a short while trying to pull his feet up. I knew my time as a Wild West conquering cowboy was coming to an end as he jumped up front, snatched the reins and gave several sharp tugs to bring the Mustangs to a halt. I was pulled from the carriage by a number of tour guides and out of sight of my family, given a few sharp blows to the ribs. The four of us were then escorted to a jeep, put inside, driven back across the desert to our hotel with not a word spoken on the 30-minute journey. Stephen and I gave each other the occasional glance and smile, but the wife didn't talk to me for 2 days and we were banned from any future excursions.
I just said you don't go, yah, when you're on a horse. I haven't thought about that, but that's the expression. Yah, once you do that...
Well, I like it says best, David, Dallas, Texas. Now, I don't know if he's having us on that inspired him to a move.
This entire programme may be some joke on us by the audience, and let's pay them back. Here's an advert.
Also from something else.
Mel Gedroych is quilting. Listen to Mel and good friend Andy Bush as they learn a great new skill and tell some brilliant stories, all whilst having some good, wholesome fun.
In a nutshell, I took a pair of scissors and I went into my husband's wardrobe. Now, this comes from a shirt that I bought him that I know he doesn't like. So I'm testing him by...
this is brilliant.
Yeah, by finding out when he discovers that the shirt has got a big patch out of the back of it.
Wow, and which area of the shirt is this taken from?
Bottom right.
Okay.
Listen now in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all good podcast apps.
Now, what we must do... welcome back, everybody. Not that you've been anywhere, and neither have we, but it's you know, it's part of the... they teach you at radio school. Welcome back, everybody. Now, on the last one, I mentioned I couldn't get a sleep. And so in my head, on advice from you about novels, which it probably works better, decided to do an A to Z of the best films I've ever seen. not the best films I've ever seen, just films. Can I do it? Otherwise, you get too bogged down in it. And I've got it with me today, and I'll try and do it before the end of the show.
Oh, lovely.
Of course. But don't, if you do, if you want to contribute to this, don't make it your favourite films. Just a generator Z. Films you've seen. It is too hard, and it also isn't interesting as ones that perhaps are not as notable, and you've got them in there. Well, I've seen these films. I care for them a little bit. So we'll do that on the other side of our friend. Who's calling in?
This is Robert.
Hey, Robert.
Hi, Danny. How are you doing?
Good. Robert, do you know anyone in Sweden?
In Sweden? No, I did reach out to the guy from Sweden, but he's not there now.
I can't hear you. Would you turn around and face the Alexandra Palace telescope? Not telescope, area.
I can see it there.
There it is. It always works. Who do you know in Sweden?
I don't know anyone in Sweden. I worked with a Swede, but he wasn't in Sweden at the time.
Okay. Fingers crossed, Peps. What was his name? His first name, his Christian name. What was it?
Tommy.
Telling you.
We might have to re-edit this so you say Ulf, because I may have said earlier on.
Okay,
may...
give that a go.
Let's do it again, right? Okay, one second. Hang on, 1 minute. Here we go. Elka, one second, right? Welcome back. Not that you've been anywhere, but it's what they teach you in radio school. Something we must do is... remember the other day you were saying about you couldn't get asleep and you were doing novels. Well, maybe it works better for novels, but I've done it for films, A to Z of films, and I must do it today. And I urge you at home to do it, but don't make it the best films you've ever seen. Make it just films you've seen, because otherwise you sometimes miss some of the minor things. Now, we've got Robert on the phone. Hey, Robert.
Hey there. How you doing, Danny?
Robert, let me ask you this first. Have you ever known any Swedes...
I have, if it happens, yeah. His name is Ulf.
Oh, you're supposed to wait. Now the public will go, oh, they've rehearsed that. We got so close. You got so close, and then yeah, his name was Ulf. And then the audience were all going, oh, they set him up for that. If I say, what was his name? You say Ulf, and I had the 1812 overture all ready to go. So why are you tugging out? Why are you tugging our coat, Robert? What's the story?
Yeah, well, my problem is I listen to your podcast about a month behind. So the other day I was listening to the 8th of February.
Good for you.
And you referred to a vibrating bed. And this vibrating bed had two speeds, and it had a low vibration and a high vibration.
This is the vibrating bed. Yes, I did. Mm. And yes, there are two speeds. And what did I say?
Yep. You said, why on earth would you choose low vibration when you can have high?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I'll just gently vibrate the bed, yeah?
Absolutely. Why would you do that? And it took me back to a story from when I was at... it was in the early 90s. I was doing work experience in my local hospital.
Oh, dude, the line is... You're fading in and out, which is a tremendous shame. Ah. Should we call him back? Look, when we call you back... Let's see how it goes when we call you back, because we need this loud and clear. It's a great premise. He wants to tell us about a vibrating bed and why you would choose the lower or the higher. But when he comes back, this little edit, like, boom, you know? What's the one they do at the moment? Not the Fred and Rose West. They got something about Putin. You should see how many takes they do on that. They're in there 8 hours to get 35 minutes of drivel. I speak from a good place. They know we're all one family here. I'll tell you what I'll do, Peps. Mm-hmm. I'll go and give us that, and then I'll give my films.
What do you want to do, your films?
All right. The first two-thirds of the show was brilliant, and it's just all fallen to bits. Fallen to bits. Here we go. I shall now bring you... this is in the middle of the night, and I didn't cheat this. In the middle of the night, I thought, OK, here we go. Films I care for, or I certainly have seen, and to see if you could help me go to sleep. The audience will have a sympathy with that now. Here we go. American Graffiti.
Oh, good.
Blazing Saddles. Chinatown. Duck Soup. Everyone Says I Love You. Follow a Star. It's a Norman Wisdom film.
Oh, OK, yep.
Goodfellas. Hail the Conquering Hero. It's a mad, 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 mad world. Jason and the Argonauts. Kes. Lost in America. Manhattan. Never Give a Sucker an Even Break. Oh, Mr. Porter. Paper Moon. Quatermass in the Pit. Road to Morocco. Sunshine Boys. Taxi Driver. Uncle Buck.
Oh.
Villain. Way Out West. There is no film beginning with X I like or have ever seen. Young Frankenstein, Zelig. Now, that wasn't bad, was it? And that's, you've got to do it without thinking about it. Yeah, I can look around.
There's about 10 on there I haven't seen, so that's quite useful.
Yes, it is. Well, on the next show, I want to hear yours and plenty of others. But then it won't be a show of lists because there's no value in that. Give us that and then we'll go to our next caller, whoever that is.
Robert's waiting in the wings.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
This is getting locked out from Andy. Back in the mid-70s, when I was about 10, we were holidaying at a great hotel in Devon, Blagden Manor, near Paignton. A family affair, mum, dad, my brother, sister, nan, granddad and a great aunt and uncle who were notifiably insane. Our holiday coincided with the 25th wedding anniversary of my mum's cousin who lived in Dawlish. So Saturday night we piled into cars and went to Dawlish for a proper 70s party. This being the 70s, on the return trip to the hotel, the drivers were as pickled as the passengers, and not something I would condone, of course. Mm-hmm. On arrival at Blagden Manor, it quickly became apparent that the front door had been locked and there was no way of getting in, short of going round to where the owners lived and waking them up at this god-awful hour of the morning. They were lovely people who probably wouldn't have minded, but my dad decided this should be an absolute last resort. Perhaps he was too sloshed to have walked the 100 yards required. Somebody then noticed that the window to the TV room was slightly open. We pushed it up and set about clambering as a group through the aperture. It was a beautiful sight. Half a dozen drunk adults, not in the prime of youth, attempting to climb through an opening and lower themselves via a 3-foot drop onto a floor. Things came to a halt when my granddad got himself stuck and we couldn't shift him, due mainly to the fact he was laughing uncontrollably about his precarious situation. We managed to lever him through the window and he had landed with all the aplomb of a £52 bag of spuds. Turning to let my great aunt know it was her turn revealed she was bent double in hysterics. I don't know if you've ever tried to heave a woman in her 50s through a window while she is crying buckets of tears of laughter and shaking, but trying to put a wet octopus in a string bag is probably easier.
Beautiful.
Finally, after what seemed like an age, we were safely inside and went off to bed. Next morning at breakfast, my dad was regaling the owners with the tale of our misdeeds. It was greeted with much merriment until the guy asked why we didn't just send one child through the window to go and open the front door. Silent contemplation.
Perfect. I didn't telegraph that. Beautiful. My friend Robert, I understand. Someone called Robert on the phone. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Danny, how are you?
I've got a pair of us. We both sound world weary. Robert, let's do this. Have you got... Do you know anyone who's Swedish, Robert?
I do, as it happens. I used to work with a guy, yeah.
What was his name?
Ulf.
That's a way of tugging our coat there, Robert. What's the story?
So I listened to your podcast about a month behind broadcast, so I'm not very with it. But in there, I was listening to the 8th of February.
Yep.
You were talking about a vibrating bed. And
yes.
Why would you use the low vibration when you've got the high vibration?
Robert, I promise you, we're going to cut straight to this, but we're going to leave in all the other stuff anyway. So everybody's aware of our relationship by now. I know. But the thing is,
Robert was being a real pro there.
Oh, well, Robert is. He was honestly. He put me to shame. I thought, oh no, I should have said, look, we're going to leave all the other stuff in. But you were really doing the right thing there. But the point is, you once had an experience with a vibrating bed, my friend. What happened?
Well, I didn't, but what it did, it took me back to work experience at my local hospital, which was Billinge Hospital, when I was 15, and I spent the day in the kitchens, and mashed potato was on the menu. And given the industrial scale, there's no peeling. It was all about smash.
Yeah.
And there was a massive bucket with a big figure of eight mixing blade in it.
Oh.
Now, crucially, Danny, this mixing blade had four speeds. One, two, three, and four.
And like you say, you should go to one if you want. But what did you do, Robert?
Well, you can imagine. The powder was added. Then the water, speed one for a while, just to stop the water sloshing around. And then they left it at two. Mm. And everyone was very satisfied that that was fine, but not me. So I asked them to put it on speed three, and they've never done this before. not a chance. It'll be carnage. I'm not cleaning it up, all of this. But I persuaded them we're going to give it a number three. We had huge lumps of mashed potato flying outside the edges of the bucket. But here's the thing. How fast would a cheetah be if it only chose three of its legs? It's got a fourth, hasn't it, Gary?
Come on, my friend, let's do this. So you
There's only one place to go.
Yeah.
It's never been done. But that day, I was given all the responsibility, everyone stood back, and I turned the dial.
Yeah.
Up to four.
And?
There was a me-shaped non-mashed potato area on the wall behind me. And everywhere, Danny, everywhere, and I mean everywhere, the ceilings, the floors, the walls, neighbours, covered.
Well,
there was no...
Robert,
the patients didn't have...
You're talking to two people here who worked on TFI Friday. If it was still on the air this week, we would have that machine and we would have various pop stars lined up around it while you, sir, walked forward and went straight to four. Did you take part in the clean-up campaign or did you do the right thing and just run away?
I legged it, so no patients had mashed potato due to equipment malfunction.
Yeah.
And I was covered. Yeah. I was sent home on the bus. I don't know what people on the 360 thought of me, but I was sent home on the bus. But, you know, I didn't learn anything, Danny. If the high speed is available, that's what you'd vibrate on.
Robert, I want to not only thank you for the extraordinary call, I want to thank you for being such a pro at the beginning and thinking, well, you know, I know how these things work. I'll give them an edit point, but sadly, we're going to leave.
Yeah.
Bless you, my friend.
Thank me, mate.
Anytime. Wasn't that something?
It's just like a group of adults that let a 15-year-old persuade them.
But what are you going
to do? Let's turn it up to four.
I would love to see that. And of course, any stories that arise out of that, we would absolutely love to hear from you. Quick one over there, Peps, and I think we'll get out of people's way.
Well, for once, this topic actually is today's topic. This tastes funny.
Okay.
It's from Adam.
Mm-hmm.
When younger, my mum served up a lovely salad that both me and my brother complained that salad cream tasted funny. But then you had to eat what was put in front of you, etc. Only after did she realise she had used custard by mistake.
Oh, that's a beautiful substitution.
Oh, no.
A salad with custard on it? I can't think of anything more British. A salad with custard on. Again, a possible title for a future show. And just to make up for any of the faffing, I'll bring you this. This is beautiful as well. This is a bit of the very last one, I promise you. One of the few podcasts who keeps apologising for still being with you. So, here we go. This is from our friend Ben. In the summer of 1978, this is losing clothing. In the summer of 1978, I'm 14, and I'm messing about with my mate Paul in front of the flats. We started wrestling on the green, and he pulled off my right Dunlop green flash trainer, the one I had marker penned with various band names. If you must know, Penetration, The Damned, Public Image Limited. And he hurled it onto the roof of the flats. There is nothing I can do to get it down, so I leave it. I go home and put on a pair of monkey boots. The shoe is lost. Or is it? Well over a year later, and I'm walking down the street, and there are four or five streets around from mine, and about four over, and in the gutter is my trainer. The band names have faded, but it is quite clearly my trainer. There. As a side note, I think this is interesting. A few weeks after Paul had thrown my shoe away, we were walking through the local arcade of shops. And in those days, the shoe shops had one shoe outside on a display stand in case you were feeling you're nicking the pairs. Do they still do that?
I think they do.
Outside one of the shops, we saw a green flash Dunlop, right foot, size 7. Yes, we nicked it. And for a short time, I had a curious pair of shoes, one clean and white, one dirty and band tagged. Now, that sounds like a fashion waiting to happen, my friend. In the meantime,
1, 2, 3, 4. Treehouse, climb up, come in, let's cozy down. Wave goodbye to that silly frown as we chase our cares away. In the treehouse, the fire's on, it's warm inside. We guarantee you'll be satisfied as we laugh the day away.
Always do, Wisby. On the other side of the table, Louise Pepper is just about to give you a heads up on next week's subjects. How about that? Louise Pepper Napoleon Pepper. Phil Wilding and Josh through the glass on behalf of something else. But as always, and particularly Robert this week, it is chiefly yourselves. We'll see you midweek.
Next time on The Treehouse, what did you find out about your neighbours? Animals or toddlers making a break for freedom? Minor local pop festivals? And how a favourite piece of clothing got ruined?
Hold up. Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.